This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Keeping the conversation going.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Hello and welcome to a very special Conversation Hour. Live from Mill Park Library. As 774 has been here all week, it's been absolutely fantastic to hear the other programs being here, and it's my turn now. Absolutely thrilled to be here. What a buzzing space. I've seen a bit of the storytelling hour for the babies. I'm seeing people studying, people from all walks of life. I am seeing the lion dancing happening behind me, which if it goes for more than an hour, I am in for. What a buzzing place, as we've been talking about, celebrating libraries all week, and we thought this was the chance for Conversation Hour to really lean into it, to celebrate the joy of libraries past and present and future. So I am asking everyone here, and also anyone listening, tell me about the library of your childhood. What do you remember about it? Your first book, potentially, that you borrowed from the library, the one you pored over, that you kept extending from week on week on week, the librarians who worked there, how important, potentially, they were to you. What happened in your library? Were you doing line dancing? Certainly not in the 70s in New South Wales. That wasn't there. They possibly wanted to, but they didn't. What activities did you do in your library? Do you still have your first library bag? I can see one in front of me. My first guest is going to be telling me about a very sweet old library bag that she still has. First library card, do you have it? Tell me your stories about the library, not just because, yes, these are the things that have been around for decades, right? They are changing, they are evolving, and some would argue, I'm sure all of my guests would argue and everyone listening would say, they may be more important than ever for so many reasons. So I want to hear from you. We're going to be talking about libraries as tourism destinations, how we're funding libraries, how they are enriching our lives, potentially at a point in time where talking to each other has been getting harder and harder, and reaching out to people who we might not normally come across. The library is the place that that can happen. That is all coming up on the Conversation Hour. Let's hop straight into it. There was a brand new role created a year ago, Victoria's first official public advocate for libraries. In fact, Australia's first is in this state. You will hear from the woman who's been in that role, what it's been all about, what she has been learning and hearing and achieving over the past year. That is coming up next. You're with 774 ABC Radio and Melbourne.
This is The Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
So you are with Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. Joining me here at the desk in the library is Andrea Rowe, who's already, we know her as a children's author, but also as Victoria's first official public library advocate. Thanks for coming and talking to us.
Good morning, Mary.
What does this role mean? It's a grand title. It must be a little bit more than just loving libraries out loud.
Oh, it's actually quite an honour. I was raised by libraries. I've formed so much of my curiosity in libraries and community connections. So to be the person who is the ambassador for Victoria's libraries is not only an honour, but it's also a learning experience for me as well. We've got 302 dynamic libraries in Victoria, and over the last year I've been visiting so many of them to learn about their unique personalities in a community and how they turn up for communities as well, because communities are so different. Mill Park has different needs than the Library of Mansfield, for example. So I've been learning about these spaces and also helping reinforce why they're so vital for Victorians right now and useful as well. You know, you come into a library like Mill Park today and you've got the makerspace is filled. You've got families on those first social connection outings in story time, and you've got people sort of asking for recommendations for reads. And
so different from so many of the libraries of our youth potentially, where it was all shh, There's none of that here.
There's no more solemn and silence in libraries now. There's bustling busyness, which is community, which is how it should be. People expressing themselves and people feeling welcome as well. So I've loved being experiencing that, but also understanding where the needs are and the gaps in communities so that I can in turn help advocate for that to decision makers and turn up to the table and sort of talk about what we need for our communities as well.
1300 222 774 is the number to call, or 0437 774 774 to text. But I'd love to hear from you and your voices telling me what libraries have meant to you, your childhood memories of libraries. Have you still got that book bag? Robin from Fitzroy, what do you think about libraries?
I'm an army brat, and that's a term given to children of service people, and we used to move every 18 months or 2 years. So my father used to say, I'm not having the Department of Supply moving all those books, join a library. So from a very early age, I belonged to libraries wherever we went, all over the world, and I spent a lot of time in libraries. I loved them. I used to read there, and then I'd choose books that were probably a bit advanced for me. But I started on the Famous Five when I was about five. And now I'm old. I'm nearly 80, and I'm a writer. I've written 16 books and a lot of stories, and most of my books are in libraries. So I'm very happy that the world has turned all the way around. The wheel's turned all the way around. Mm.
Oh, Robin, that is fantastic. And as you were travelling around, I guess it didn't just give you that resource, did it? It gave you a bit of a space to belong?
A place to belong, exactly. And I'd leave school usually and make my way for the library before I went home, because sometimes we lived out of town in, you know, army barracks and things. And so it was a bit of a trek from school to home. So I'd often go to the library after school and spend a couple of hours there before I went home. And my parents knew where I was. I'd just tell them, if I'm not home straight away, I'll be in the library. And I knew all the librarians by name, and I was a funny little fat kid with glasses. And so, you know, they looked after me, and I had many hours in the libraries on my own, poking around and reading.
Oh, Robin, what a delightful story. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Yes, are you like Robin? Do you remember those librarians who helped you along? Maybe you did have those books that were slightly advanced for you. Rob in Kingston, what do you think about libraries?
Oh, good morning, Mary. It's Rob. Look, Mary, my memories of libraries are as a place you could go to rest and have peace and just get into a few books and not being distracted by the rest of life. And that's changed. It's changed to the detriment, I'm going to say, because now you can't do that. There's other activities in library. It's a noisy environment. And that's been taken away. I don't. It's been taken away, and it's almost to the extent that you just can't get anywhere to do that sort of thing in a library anymore.
Rob, that's really interesting to hear. Let me go to Andrea Rowe, who is Victoria's first official public library advocate, and who's with me now. What would you have to say to Rob's concerns and anyone who shares those?
Look, Rob, libraries definitely have changed. And the thing that I love about libraries also is how responsive they are to the different pockets of what community needs. So some libraries have been trialling out pods, like quiet pods for reading and meeting spaces. Some writing libraries, you can actually book a silent reading area, and it's kind of still the quieter area. So I know it's a tricky balance for libraries, but they're trying to find this place. I mean, personally, I also feel that one of the greatest challenges we have now, we have literacy decline in Australia. We are calling out for opportunities to have our children be exposed to literature and information and ideas so that they can in turn contribute to society. So if we encourage and foster the dynamic elements of a library as well, that's also a win for us too. But it is a balance, and I have been to some beautiful libraries where they've got little sort of signs up, and this is a quiet reading spot, and I really applaud those libraries experimenting with that too.
And interestingly, you're saying that. I was wandering around and just marvelling at so many things happening in the one space. And I think it's about this building too. It's about acoustics and things like that. I actually never, there are so many things happening in one open space, and yet it didn't feel overwhelming. Part of it is about design?
I think a lot of it is about design, and there are some specialists that come into our libraries that look at, you know, the people flow, how people are accessing information, accessibility of everything from bathrooms, coffee shops, all these sorts of things. So this is such a wonderful, I mean, they call Mill Park the spaceship. It is this beautiful spaceship. I mean, this would have been the library of my dreams as a kid, and to know that, you know, a family can come here and a parent can have a coffee while the kids are exploring and gaining books, and then someone's poked off in the corner in the little workspaces. It's a fantastic way of families and community coming together. And I always say that libraries aren't just borrowing spaces, they're gathering and growing spaces as well. And this is what we're learning as a community. We're growing into our libraries in different ways. And this is a perfect example of how that's done.
I'm asking you, if you're listening, share those stories of the libraries of your youth. And I believe there's someone in the audience who would also like to talk. Mary.
Mary.
Hello, Mary. We met before.
Yes, we did.
Yes. And what did you want to say?
Oh, I just wanted to give you a quiz.
Oh, Mary. This, okay, if anyone has been listening, Raf talked about this yesterday. You have been so lovely giving quilts. Tell us about the story behind the quilts, Mary.
We make charity quilts, but Joe makes all the top. So it's all
That's
the
your
little,
husband?
Yes. He's a Vietnam vet. So he makes, sews all the tops, and then we both put them together and put them on a big machine, and then we free motion the quilting, and then the binding goes on, and then it's hand-stitched.
Look, I mean, it's just a beautiful story. What have quilts meant for you? And I believe you've been part of the craft group here as well.
Yeah, we meet here every Thursday. It's probably a lot more talking than sewing, yeah. You know. Coffee, craft and conversation. The reason I came around the quilts is I had to leave work pretty quickly, and I didn't know what I was going to do after it, and I attended a community quilt group, and from there this was my life after work.
Fantastic. Yep. And now melding with the library community.
Yep.
Mary,
love it here.
Lovely to meet you.
You too.
Also, I know that the 774 presenters have really loved meeting you as well. So
thank you
and thank you for coming along as well today.
Thank you very much.
Oh, lovely people out here in Mill Park. As we know, before I am going to get to more of our guests, but on the line also is Jill from Williamstown. Tell me your memories. Hi, Jill.
Enjoying the chat about libraries. In the middle 50s, we were living out at Heathmont, which is just past Ringwood, which was considered to be an outer suburb at that time. We used to get books from the state library. They used to send out a list of books. It was probably about an A5 size list of books. You got to choose some books that you'd like to read, and that would get sent back by mail. And then eventually you would get a parcel of books out on the train to Heathmont Station, and you'd go down there and pick the packet of books up.
Oh, how exciting.
Never ever managed to get the book. Sorry?
You didn't manage to get the book, were you saying?
Oh, we didn't very often manage to get the books that you might have selected, but it was exciting to get them, and that fostered our love of reading.
Oh, that's terrific. You're still going to libraries, Jill?
Yes.
Oh, terrific. Yeah, fantastic. Thank you, Jill. Pam from Moorabbin, tell me about your memories of libraries.
Yes, I was saying that we had a bus that used to come to the top of the street once a week, and we used to go there. It was a library bus.
Oh, terrific. And then you got on and you could look through.
I was the first to get on and the last to leave. I'd sit down at my little section and absolutely adore all these books and just wanted them all.
Was it every week, Pam?
I think it was every week, yes.
Oh, Pam, that's fantastic.
It was a delight. And with my children, when they were little, we lived in Malvern, and we frequented the library there. Then we moved to Mount Waverley, and again, we frequented it there, and I still do.
buses and trains to bring library books. We don't know how lucky we are. Thank you, Pam and Jill. I'll talk now to Angela Savage, who's also with us at the table. She's CEO of Public Libraries Victoria. These stories, Angela, really do emphasise how deep and profound our relationship has been with libraries. How do you think we're going with them in the present day?
I think that libraries are appealing to an ever broader group of people in the community. I think we still have the elements that people traditionally love about libraries, obviously the books, but we also do, as you can see from a library like Mill Park, offer such an incredibly diverse range of services these days.
And give us an example. What could you come here to do?
I'm looking across the room at the local history office. So there's a whole section dedicated to the history of this area, and they can also help with family history. There's a multimedia centre with, and you mentioned the makerspace earlier, which has all kinds of equipment that you probably couldn't afford to buy for yourself or maybe even to pay to use. It's all free at the library. There are libraries now that offer what we call library of things. So not just borrowing books, but you can borrow, well, down on the surf coast, you can borrow surfboards and paddle boards. In other libraries, you can borrow home thermal testing kits, so you can check your house for, you know, to make it more environmentally sustainable. You can borrow an induction cooktop if you've never used one to try before you buy. You can borrow sewing machines.
What?
You can borrow shredders. You can, like, there's all these kind of big ticket items that would be very expensive if you just needed them, or you probably only even use them as a once off. A whole lot of libraries now offer those to be borrowed.
Feels like library has become a much bigger word than we ever knew. This is 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. You are listening to The Conversation Hour. We are celebrating libraries today. So many people have hopped on the line. Glenys in Hampton. You like chatty libraries. Is that right, Glenys?
Oh, hi, Mary. Yes, I'm not sure. Maybe Angela's not aware. Chatty Cafe Australia has about 20-plus library enrolled in our program where people can come in and have a chat for an hour and a half or so.
Oh, fantastic. And does it get noisy?
It does get noisy. But some of them have been going for, you know, 3 or 4 years and have a regular group of people coming along to chat. We're kind of addressing issues around loneliness and social isolation as well as just general connection of the community.
Angela?
And indeed, Glenys, it's a terrific program. We love Chatty Cafe. And we also, a lot of libraries also offer English conversation classes to people, just very low key. And one of the interesting things, we've seen a huge growth in library facilitated book clubs in the last couple of years. And I think all of these kinds of activities, they're bringing people together. You mentioned social cohesion earlier, Mary. You know, they bring people together. It's low stakes. Mm. You know, you don't have to perform. You don't have to be anything. Mm. You can talk about books, which is kind of a safe space. You're not going in blank. And it's just a way that people can connect in a very kind of relaxed and comfortable way. And we see a lot of connections being made, friendships being developed. It's really important at this day and age, post-COVID, and in a world where, you know, there's a lot of division, that libraries are this safe, welcoming, inclusive space where we can make something, a different kind of society.
Absolutely, especially if you've got line dancing happening amongst it all, I've got to say. Now, Richard, you're on the line from Ballarat. I believe you're a bit of a library convert, is that right?
Well, I had a stroke 10 years ago and spent a number of months in hospital, and when I got out, I was the guy that lived up the road from the library and never went. But for every day of my recovery for the next 12 months, I would go to the library, read the magazines, talk to people, fall asleep on the couch, just do stuff. And I suppose I'm ringing because a lot of these things that we have in our society, we don't need them until we need them. And I needed the library then, and I still go now. I've just been to Western Australia. I went to the Fremantle Library. I went to the Bunbury Library whilst watching North Melbourne over there. And I'm a convert.
Oh, that's fantastic. How often do you go now, Richard?
Oh, not enough, because I'm back into a busy life, but I love it that it's there, and I really value that it's there.
Richard, thank you so much for sharing that story. Andrea, I could see you were nodding furiously.
That's so inspiring, Richard, and I agree. Libraries are a healing place, but more importantly, they're also a place where we can reset our compass during times of change. And Richard, you were talking about a transition when you were taking care of your health. You know, we can be going through enormous changes in our lives, personally or professionally, that we've heard today, where libraries give us scope to imagine, what if, could I be someone else? Could I try something else? Or I've always wanted to try something. Or I don't know what I need to know about this, but I'd like to give it a go. And for example, Mill Park Library, during the Warm Winter Reads program, they have a book concierge program where if you don't really even know how to choose a book, or you're feeling overwhelmed, someone can meet with you and help you figure out the sort of books that might be for you. I mean, that's a wonderful way to transition back into reading, for
example. There are various times in my life where I just like, oh, I can't go back to what I used to read, but I don't know where to go. That's true. A librarian. It's always a librarian. Ask your librarian. I could talk with you ladies for the entire hour, but unfortunately, I've got many other fantastic guests to get to. But really quickly before I go, I just want to ask very quickly your personal connections. Andrew, in front of you, you have still got your OG book bag. She's holding it up to everybody here. It's petite. It's got embroidery on it. You've kept that.
Thanks to my mum, Esther, who made this. This was my very first library bag with a little bit of hobby text and embroidery. So this is peak 1970s library bag. And this was my first library. I was born in Mortlake, and Warrnambool was my first library. And I have very vivid memories of walking into a library and feeling like this was my place. But also, I really feel like it set the temperature for my life of this is where I can go to borrow things that can help me become, you know, who I want to be in the future. There's something very visceral about holding a library bag, and it can hold so much. I never leave a library without feeling like I've got a full library bag, but also I feel so hopeful when I leave a library with everything you can be and be exposed to as well.
Oh my goodness, I want to just borrow books now. Anna, you're in the audience. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
I've been started my librarian journey from my childhood when my mom brought some books from library and read me until I fall asleep. And then I continued with magazines about Backstreet Boys, about Leonardo DiCaprio, and made my own book about Leonardo DiCaprio.
Didn't we all?
Yeah. And then, of course, during the student time, I was a big fan of library because I spent much of the time there with 19th century books, making some reports for my studying. So my journey continuing right now, and now it's mostly non-fiction books, fiction, psychology. So I think library is the best place for get knowledges and to get some good experience for your whole life.
Anna, that is just fantastic. Thank you for sharing your story. Yeah, just shows how relevant and changing libraries can be. Just to finish off with you, Angela, you've talked recently about funding. It's always going to be a bit tricky. Libraries tend to get forgotten sometimes, don't they, in various governmental budgets. How are we off with this sort of support, this sort of thing that we're hearing and feeling here in Mill Park Library? Are you pretty confident about the future of libraries? We still need to fight?
We still do need to fight, and I think part of the problem is that we're so polite in libraries and we need to be little more assertive about our needs. You know, and going back to that point that Rob, I think, made earlier about lack of quiet space, that's a resource issue. If we're properly resourced, if we can build the buildings, if we can design the designs and modernise our libraries, we can cater to all kinds of different people. At the moment, we've got areas of Melbourne where they are really underserviced for libraries. So in the established suburbs, you've got one library for every 30,000 people. In the growth areas, it's more like one library for every 62,000 people. It's not equitable. Those growth areas in particular are suffering, and we would argue that they need libraries more than ever. We know that most of the people who use libraries are young families, and those areas are full of young families. Yes. So, you know, we're campaigning hard to see an increase in resources and more libraries for more people.
Sure, everyone would warmly agree with you here. We're running out of time, so but I must say goodbye to you now. Thank you so much for joining me, Andrea Rowe and Angela Savage.
Thank you. Thanks, Mary.
Later this hour, we're going to be talking about libraries as destinations. We heard from Richard, who called up, travelled and going to libraries as part of a tourism experience. I'd love to hear from you, 1300 222 774, if you've got that sort of story. But coming up next, I've got a fella in a very fancy suit next to me, Iskander Razak, of course, your ABC Weekend 7pm presenter, is going to join me, and we're also going to be talking about the joys, would you believe, during World Cup, of walking football.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
It's a very special Conversation Hour. We're in Mill Park Library. As 774 has been all week, very soon we're going to be talking to Iskander Razak about his library experiences, but also Judy in Rosebud. Tell me your library memories.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
I didn't expect to be so quick. Hello.
What do you remember about?
Well, I'm quite old. I'm 89. Brought up in Glen Huntly, and we didn't have municipal libraries in those days. There was a little shopfront library in Glen Huntly Road called Mrs. Hunter's Lending Library, and my mum and dad and myself and my brother used to go there, I think, every week. I was very fond of the Anna Green Gables books, and also another series, what was it called? It was an Australian series anyway. The author was Mary Grant Bruce.
Someone's going to tell us. Someone will really tell us.
The Billabong books, they were called.
That's right, the Billabongs, that's right.
I don't know if they're still around. Probably not.
A lifelong romance with libraries, Judy?
Pardon?
You've got a lifelong romance with libraries.
Oh, I certainly have, yes. I read a lot. I get through, two or three books a week usually. We've got a very good library in Rosebud where I live. And I also live in a retirement village which also has a good little library.
Oh, that's so terrific.
I'm well serviced for books.
Judy, good on you. Maybe you can see if those Billabong series are in your village library.
Yeah, I don't know. I really should try and find them. I know.
I'm sure your librarian will know.
I eventually ended up the whole Anne series, which my daughter loved, and my granddaughter now has them all.
Good on you, Judy. Thank you so much for sharing those memories. Iskander Razak, do you still go to your library?
Howdy, Mary.
Hello.
I just looking at the
great
line dancing.
You.
I did not know that this would happen at Mill Park Library, that there'd be line dancing behind you.
I know. You've been drawn away from the books going towards line dancing.
I have, yeah. This is the modern library. Libraries for me were a sanctuary and a shelter. As a young child who was outrageously unpopular amongst his own peers, the library was the place to go and have a place to be and imagine and learn. I learned to play chess at a library because of Star Wars 3D chess. I learned to use computers at a library at a more recreational level. And I learned to enjoy literature or learn literature outside of my curriculum. Libraries are the unboxing of many, many unimagined worlds.
The unboxing of worlds. You've heard that. That's a beautiful way to sum it up, Isk. It's also a way that worlds can be joined together. Community groups can gather in a library. Sitting with Isk and I is Mick Trim, who is a Walking Football for Health Victoria organiser and participant as well. And you're here today as one of many community groups who do gather at the library as well. Welcome, Mick.
Thank you.
We wanted to speak with you in particular because this is Men's Health Week and you are an advocate for walking football, which I didn't know what that would look like. It's essentially football while you're walking instead of running on a pitch, is that right?
That's correct. And we'll say it's soccer, the handball version.
Soundball, that's right. Yeah, and I can hear your English, so you're probably happy this morning after the World Cup
result. Yes, good result.
That's right.
Tell us about why you got into walking football and its benefits.
Yeah, I mean, that's because I grew up with soccer. I also lived in England for 20 years of my life. Back in 2017, I was pretty much in pain 24/7, got diagnosed with fibromyalgia. I had to give up work, had to give up driving, became very depressed. A couple of breakdowns, you know, I used to wake up in the morning, look out my window, say, what's the point, go back to bed. Then I heard about walking football and I thought, well, that's something I can do. I may not be able to play running sport, I may not be able to be competitive, but I can walk and I can kick a ball. So I sort of got involved with a local organisation up here. And from then onwards, I sort of researched around the world about what walking football does. And a couple of years ago, we started Walking Football for Health. And it's a programme which basically everybody and anybody can play, doesn't matter how old you are.
How does it work, Mick? How does it work? On the pitch, same numbers?
No, so
substitutions?
It's substitutions, yes. So it's basically on a basketball-sized court, if you imagine how big a basketball court you... Yeah, and the beauty of it, we can, you know, three a side up to six, seven a side, you know, we can just play around with the numbers depending on who turns up. As the title of the sport suggests, it is all walking. There's no contact, your ball's kept down below waist height.
No headers.
No.
No contact either.
No contact. So
none of that diving.
Correct, yeah, no slide tackles, diving or anything like that. So the idea is that, you know, it's safe for everybody. I mean, our oldest player is 90, our youngest is 8.
That's fantastic.
People with disabilities, pretty much anybody can play. People with Parkinson's, people with stroke, we've got people who've had acquired brain injuries, just about anybody.
So it probably doesn't happen a lot considering who can take part, but yellow cards and red cards still?
Oh, there's still some of that. If you run too much, you'll be or contact too much, you'll be asked to leave the pitch.
Mick, you talked about your depression.
Yes.
Looking back, how important was walking football for you?
Look, it's what got me out of bed. I used to spend all day in bed, really didn't do much, you know, questioning life, what it's all about. All of a sudden, there was this something which I grew up with, something I liked. And yeah, I were quite open to say that I think it saved my life. I think I wouldn't be here now if, you know, it hadn't been for walking football. And, you know, it's a big thing, mental health. It's about getting out there, being active, getting socially connected, you know. Mm.
And being socially connected is what we're talking about today through libraries as well. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
No worries. Thanks for having
me
on.
Yeah, here at the library. Thank you. That is Mick Trim. Walking Football for Health Victoria is the thing that you should be looking for if you are interested in that as well. Thank you so much, Mick.
No worries, thank you.
And I believe Mia is in the audience. Isk, you were talking about line dancing. Mia?
Yes,
is
hi.
Right front and centre of it.
Hi there.
What's happening out behind us, Mia?
Well, when our regular hall is not available or during the school holidays, when Whittlesea U3A doesn't operate, we were very, very fortunate to be invited to the library to be able to dance and continue our exercise, which we feel is very enjoyable and very important.
Yeah. And why line dancing?
Well, line dancing makes you forget about all your worries. It keeps our bodies and our minds very active, which is important in your later years. And we actually started, well, I became a tutor with Whittlesea U3A just after COVID lockdown started.
Yeah.
All the halls had closed, etc. And we decided we still wanted to dance. So within the restrictions of the number of people that were able to dance or exercise together, we started dancing outdoors at Mill Park Lakes. Mm-hmm. On the concrete, which is not great for older knees and hips, but we managed. And then we moved up to South Morang Football Club.
Yeah.
And danced on the concrete there.
Is it better being in a library, near a library?
Oh, man. You know, there's toilet facilities. The surface is much more pleasant. We have cover if the weather is inclement.
Mia, will you take Isk into your group? Because he's pretty keen. He's just bouncing out of his seat, wanting to be in it.
How do you choose the music? Because you had You had country stuff, you had stuff with a bit of Latin rhythm, a bit of a cha-cha I saw going on. How do you choose the music?
Well, I go to YouTube for a lot of my inspiration, and if I like the music and I like the steps, I think, okay, this is for us. Some of the lyrics in the music is a little bit questionable, but however, we still dance to it, and we sort of like, you know, concentrate on the steps rather than the lyrics of the music.
Mia, you are an inspiration. Thank you so much for telling us all about that. I hope other people are inspired to out and do the same. Isk, thank you so much for joining me today. That's Iskander Razak. You know him from the telly, 7 p.m. You are listening to Conversation Hour. Now, coming up next, if you have actually travelled to go and see a library, whether it's around Australia or overseas, or you've been overseas like our caller, Richard, or interstate, and thought, while I'm here, I need to go and visit a library, because libraries as tourism is a thing. That's coming up next on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
And I'm joined now by Stuart Kells, who's an author and who can tell us about something called Library Planet. Basically, a social glue is what he says libraries are, and part of it can be travel as well. Hi, Stuart. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about Library Planet, for people who don't know.
Well, as you said, library tourism is a thing. People make libraries a focus of travel. And we see that in Melbourne, for example. There's more than 2 million visitors every year to the State Library of Victoria. And a lot of those are tourists who come to experience the architecture, experience the spaces, experience all the different services, as well as the books. And I did a world tour with my two young children just before COVID of libraries, focusing on libraries. And we went to major libraries in, you know, Switzerland and America, or Tokyo and London and a whole bunch of other places. And we really found that the libraries were set up to receive people like us. They loved the idea of us coming and visiting. They were ready for kids. They had, you know, story time events and puppet shows and costumes, and they just really welcomed us. And that, I think that's one reason why library tourism is a thing, because they're these non-commercial, you know, accessible spaces. And so, yeah, Library Planet is a bit of a crowdsourced guide to world libraries. So people visit libraries and then write about their experience and send us that, and we put that up on the site. And so it's a great celebration. Like your program today, it's a celebration of libraries and people who love libraries.
Mm. And Stuart, this has been your space for quite some time. You've immersed yourself in how libraries are evolving. And there is a tension, isn't there, between, you know, attracting people with fancy exhibitions and so forth, and still being true to the soul of what a library is. We can see in Mill Park the expansion of the definition of library. It's a tricky thing, though, isn't it?
I think so, particularly in this digital era, because the tendency is to say, oh, well, books are a sort of an obsolete technology and we're going to move towards digital. And I think the Yarra Plenty libraries that run Mill Park and some of the Northeastern libraries, they've got a really good balance between maintaining the collection but also doing all the other things and having the digital services, because there's nothing like the serendipity of finding and handling physical books. You just can't replicate that online. You can't replicate it in ChatGPT or something. So still honouring and maintaining that physical side, but also doing all the other things as well. So that's a really important tension. And, yeah, the all the other tensions around, you've touched on a few of them, around different uses of space, like, you know, are we allowed to talk in a library? Is it for silent reading? And librarians are very good at managing all of those different tensions. Mm.
And as well, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that now maybe more than ever we need libraries, and there's quite a few undercurrents that go into that. It's a time when AI is confronting us and our humanity. It's a time when politics just seems so riven. What are the roles of books and libraries in this post-truth era, this really riven era that we're in at the moment?
Yeah, well, look, books themselves are a great antidote to the post-truth era, because they're all curated, both by librarians and by publishers. And so they're a, you know, an indicator and an anchor of quality and reliability at a time when there's so much, you know, junk information around. But also just the non-digital, the physical side of libraries, interacting with real people, interacting in real spaces. Several of your callers have really, you know, called that point out to say they need somewhere to go that's not somewhere that's, you know, you have to pay to be there. It's not a forbidding place, but a welcoming place. That personal contact and the physical contact with books is becoming more important as everything becomes more digital, right? It's a bit of a paradox. And so books are really having a moment. Book sales are up. You know, library tourism, literary travel is also up. You touched on book clubs, literary festivals, book fairs are all booming. And libraries are really important in that kind of book infrastructure, right? Where the interface between people and books just so important.
Stuart Kells is with you, author and aficionado of the website, which is Library Planet, which is, of course, about travelling for libraries. Stuart, what's your favourite library then, if I can put you on the spot, that you've ever been to or travelled to?
I have so many favourites.
Maybe
we went to this amazing library in Switzerland, which is a medieval library at a monastery called St. Gallen or San Gallen, founded in the Middle Ages by Irish monks, but in Switzerland. And it's just an incredible space, like everything about it, the way the books are presented, the bindings, the ceilings, all the artifacts, the mummies. You know, it's just, it's an incredible, magical place. And taking my daughters there.
They would allow chat there. The monks? Is that the last remaining silent library?
It's incredible. The floors are made of this beautiful parquetry. And in order to walk in, you have to wear these special felt covers on your shoes to protect the floor. Obviously, it helps with the silence as well, but it protects the timber floors as well. It's just an incredible, magical place. The Library of Congress in Washington is just incredible. The British Library is amazing for some of their their permanent exhibitions. The Bodleian in Oxford. You'll get me going. I'm pretty excited about libraries.
Stuart, we could talk to you all day, but we'll need to wrap it there. Thank you so much for joining us on this Conversation Hour.
Thanks, Mary. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Stuart Kells is author, and look up Library Planet as well. There are some inspirations for your next travels, potentially. You're with The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. And joining me now is Zoe Kassim, who's Director of Programs and Publishing, representing the Indigenous Literacy Foundation. We're talking about literacy in general, but also when it comes to Indigenous Literacy Foundation, what libraries do mean. Zoe, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the Indigenous Literacy Foundation and the sort of the challenges as we speak in 2026.
It is a bit of a mouthful that literacy being in the... No. It's a long word and we do love it. But Indigenous Literacy Foundation, the real special, unique space that we work in is in putting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander home languages, our first languages, at the forefront of shops, schools and libraries where possible, and really highlighting Australia's first storytellers and that power of storytelling, and highlighting the importance of our young people seeing themselves in the books that they read and that they have access to that they might not have had access to before.
We've been talking about this sort of push for many, many years now. What's the situation at the moment? How far are we from where you'd like it to be?
Well, I would like to see every single Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander language represented in books. And I would love to see our stories and our artworks highlighted and promoted in every single storefront and our education systems. So I think we're on the right path, and we're in good company with Magabala Books and other black publishing houses, and Australian publishing houses are increasing their Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander authors and illustrators in their titles as well. So we're working towards it, and I think it's a beautiful kind of testament to the value and strength of our cultures being highlighted as they are.
Mm. And what I think is fascinating as well is using technology to help with this, the wonderful ability to allow readers to hear first languages spoken aloud. You sort of touched on it there. There's an ability for that to happen as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Indigenous Literacy Foundation's books, they all actually come with a QR code where you can listen to that read-along version of our stories. Because Aboriginal languages are very complex and you put your tongue in different parts of your mouth to pronounce the words, that we wanted to continue that geographical connection from one place to another so that you can actually hear the storytellers, you can hear them singing their songs or reading their words and sharing their language. And it also helps us with in a technology kind of way continue that practice of that spoken storytelling that happens all over. So it is a beautiful way to kind of connect to that first language, to remove the fear of reading these books and listening to these books, because it allows you to connect to the language without having to worry about getting it wrong.
So Zoe, anyone who's listening to this and interested should just go ask their local librarian potentially?
Absolutely. So we've been working with a number of different library distribution companies to get our books into libraries, into local bookshops, but also Overdrive. They have a digital version of some of our titles and we are adding more into that so that we can increase that access point for where people can actually get our books. And on Overdrive you also have the read-along versions as well, so you're not missing out on that even if it is on a digital platform.
Zoe, it sounds fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too. Zoe Kassim is Director of Programs and Publishing representing the Indigenous Literacy Foundation. We are here in Mill Park Library for the Conversation Hour, and I will hopefully try and squeeze another call in. But joining me now is a couple of people that we've met here. Lee Morant is the cafe manager of this buzzing cafe here inside the library. And Patrick is also with us. He's a barista working at the cafe. Welcome to you both.
Yep. Thanks for having
us. Lee, tell us a little bit about the cafe and about Araluen.
Sure. Chances Cafe, it's a training facility and it's run by Araluen. Araluen is a disability service in the northeastern suburbs, and we pride ourselves on imagining better lives for our participants and striving towards their independence. We have two cafes, one in Heidelberg and one in this amazing space here at Mill Park Library, as you can see, and as you mentioned, buzzing.
It's great.
Yeah.
And good toasties, I can just say. Yes,
I haven't finished it yet. Our cafe has actually been nominated. They are finalists in the Whittlesea Business Awards, and that's to be announced next week.
Oh, terrific.
And Chances basically just shows everyone, the community and participants, that anything's possible with the right amount of support and the right community and people around them.
So who is encouraged to come and work in the cafe?
Yeah, no worries. So we are an NDIS-funded pathway facility, so people have NDIS funding, can come in and do their learning. They do 2 years of learning, and then we hand them on to somebody. We have a disability employment lead within Araluen. So we'll hand them over to them and they'll hopefully do the work to get them out and into some businesses. So if there's any businesses out there that would like to help us out with some training or work experience, that would be great.
There you go. Patrick, you have one of the most important jobs in a cafe. You're the barista. How long have you been working there?
I was working at Milk Monday, Wednesday and Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I was working Mill Park Library, and I was doing coffee chances and latte, cappuccinos and flat white.
Yeah. Do you like it?
I like it.
Why?
Because I like it.
Fair enough. That's one of the best answers anyone has ever gotten. Do you look forward to coming, and why do you look forward to coming?
Because I like to come in.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. You're going to continue to work here for a while?
Yes.
Do you want to learn anything other than making coffees? You got your eye on the toasties or anything?
Well, I was working in coffees and the toasties.
I'm going to say, actually, it's a very good coffee that you make as well.
Thank you.
I've been sampling that as well. So, Lee, you're talking about training as well. You want to expand your footprint, not just across Whittlesea?
So we've touched our footprint into Banyule Council, also Whittlesea Council and Nillumbik. We have been in Nillumbik, but unfortunately we're not in that position anymore. And our two cafes are thriving at the moment, and so, of course, with more interest becomes more cafes maybe, so who knows.
Good luck to you, and well done to you, Patrick, as well on your work here, and thank you for joining us on 774.
Thank you.
Now, I believe we have Hassan who wants to speak with us. Hi, Hassan. How are you going?
Hi, my name is Hassan, and I'm a co-founder of a hiking community. It's called the Hiking Tribe. And basically, we've been creating events within Australia, within Victoria, and within this council as well. When we introduce people to go outside, and we introduce the Australian wilderness to them.
Okay, and, so how do people get in touch with you? Do you use the library?
So actually, we come to library as a rendezvous point, like where we meet up. But we are basically our community is based on Facebook, and that's where we create events itself. And we are based in Whittlesea as well, so we do a lot of hikes. And we take people outside, as I mentioned, yeah.
And what do people who join your community get out of this? What surprises them when they go out to the Australian wilderness, as you say?
That's a very good question. So a lot of times people who come with us, they're not physically too much active, you know. And when they come and when they're with a group of people and they're doing the hike all together, they kind of surprise themselves as well how fit they are. And what they can achieve when they're outside, you know.
Yeah.
And it's good for people, those are migrants as well in Australia, because it's kind of introduces them to the local dangers like snakes and all that, and you know what to expect outside. So it's an overwhelming, it's a fascinating experience for them, and it's a growing community. And I would,
brilliant.
You should come someday as well.
That sounds fantastic. And the name of it again, Hassan?
It's called The Hiking Tribe.
The Hiking Tribe, yeah. On Facebook.
That is
there
correct.
You go. Thank you so much for telling us about that, and hopefully other people are inspired as well to do the same. Sounds terrific. And Vicky in Oak Park, you wanted to talk about a pen pal club at the library.
Yes, hi, Vicky. Hi, Mary. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, in the 1970s at my local library, which was Glenroy in the northern suburbs of Melbourne, we had a little pen pal club, and I was given a pen pal at about the age of about 8 and 9, and I exchanged letters with this girl in the UK over the years, and I sent air letters and things like that. For your listeners that don't know what pen pals is, it's when you write to somebody in another state or overseas.
Oh, good call, Vicky. Seems like something stuck in the past, but it was fantastic.
A lovely friendship formed, and about 15 years later, I attended her wedding in Birmingham, in England. So that was great.
Are you still in touch, Vicky?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, very occasionally, but we are.
Vicky, thank you. Pen pals through the library. That is just brings back a lot of great old memories about letters apart from anything else.
Yeah. And I'm also now a librarian myself in the TAFE sector, and I also teach in the Diploma of Library Studies at the Institute.
Cherry on top. Vicky, thank you so much for sharing that story and your love of libraries. Running out of time in this wonderful place here. Thank you so much for joining me in the Conversation Hour today, live from Mill Park Library. It's been an absolute joy. Please join me again tomorrow on the Conversation Hour. And goodbye for the moment from Mill Park.